Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
It's always fantastic listening, talking to Adam White, or listening to Adam White when he talks. He's back again on a Friday. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. How are you today?
Pretty flat, thanks.
Pretty flat?
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah, no, I don't think you care.
Not really.
No, exactly right. That's right. Morning, Rammer. Triple Premier. No, not Triple Premier.
Yeah, triple.
That's Jimmy.
No, triple.
Premiership player with the Bombers these days, manager to
Should
the Stars.
Should have been triple, but they got ahead of themselves.
Morning, Adam.
Yes, good morning. You're right. Yes, Whitey, okay, rubbing in a little bit more. Could have been triple.
Well, it should have been. Should have been in 99 and it should have been in 2001.
Oh, we'll just take the greatest season ever. But anyway, that's okay. That's a story for another day.
You shouldn't think like that. You should think
well,
about
Well, I have to because I can't. We happened. Can't rectify what happened in the past, can we? Can't go back in the time machine from Back to the Future.
I mean, you took a talk about this on the golf course today, surely. Like, you don't need to bore us with your rubbish, your Essendon propaganda today and your rubbish. I mean, you could do that later on. We're in the car.
Yeah, we can.
Spend some hours together in the car.
Spend some real hours
this morning.
Together, Whitey and I.
How about me? I'll just stay here and just hold the fort and do my job.
You can go and walk your dogs.
No, jam it, mate.
You get some sleep.
No, jam it.
You can look forward to planning your non-holidays because the women's season's going another 5 months or something.
I heard a whisper.
No, zero holidays.
I heard a whisper yesterday.
Never have Whitey. Holidays.
So they announced, obviously, the AFLW season will be starting in December.
It will be.
And the expansion of the competition to all 18 teams by 2023.
Correct.
I heard a little whisper that Carlton may be playing and have lobbied to play on Christmas Day.
There's a double header. They'll play Christmas Day and Boxing Day.
You're an idiot, mate.
Why? That would be amazing.
Well, that's fine.
I'm sitting there the kitchen at the Christmas table with Mum and Dad, and I'm seeing you with your Santa hat on coaching the girls.
I would have a Santa hat on,
too. I know you would, because you're a very festive person.
I'm a very festive person.
Yeah.
Normally, when I'm playing golf with my mates. I would wear a Santa hat. No, but you know what, though? Whilst we're talking about that, Christmas Eve footy... It would be
awesome. I reckon it'd be a great idea.
We need to put a hand up for that at Icon Park.
What would you
Eve.
Watch? AFLW, Christmas Eve, or the Carols by Candlelight?
Oh, mate. Is that only so much Rhonda Birchmore you can have in your life.
Every year.
Well, Dennis Walter.
It is a tradition.
Come on, man.
What are you talking about, come on, man?
Mate, straight to Icon Park. Turn the telly.
Jeez, you'd have to put on a good show.
Find
for me
the
to
Blues
be
dominating straight there. There's only so much Rhonda and Dennis I can take. I've had enough.
Whitey, where are you? Where are you?
40 years
I know you Dennis. Like your Christmas carols.
Are you serious?
You like your Christmas carols. Come on.
He's the last person you want to ask this if you're on support.
He's the Grinch.
He'd be a footy man. He wants footy on the TV. Ooh. He loves it. He
but in all seriousness, what did you make at the earliest start? You're happy? You're sad? Do you think it's a good thing? A bit of clear air for...
I think clear air is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think clear air is a good thing. And it'd been mooted for a little while that this possibly would be happening. So been able to get my head around it for a little while. But I think clear air is a good thing. It comes forward 6 weeks maybe.
So we go to a 10-round season with another 3 weeks for finals.
Yeah,
and
so it's an extra week of season,
and
basically.
Mid-March finish.
Yep, mid-March, the weekend off after the community series before round one, which is a nice place to finish it. Mm. Like, that's perfect world stuff. I think that's a good place to finish. Now, there has been some conversation and comments in the last 24 hours about playing through the heat of summer and all that sort of stuff and coming up against the cricket and the tennis and all that. But remembering all those stuff sort of go consecutive days, whereas the footy goes, it's a couple of days of the weekend.
It's weekly, yeah.
So I think it's a different cycle you're watching, you're consuming your sport. I don't think it's going to be a huge issue. The timing, in terms of weather and stuff, there'll be more night games, more twilight games, you'd think, which are more viewer friendly anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it'll work okay.
You play through February anyway.
That's right. It's the hottest month. Yeah, that's right.
And so you do have a pre-season through January.
I don't see it being a big problem, I must admit. The only challenge is going to be... The challenge we'll face, I think, will be staff. Staffing requirements throughout that Christmas period, December, where the intensity
most
of the season
like
starts in December. Most seasons of years are winding down with their other employment, which all the staff have, or basically all the staff have. So that might be a little bit of a challenge, but... I think it'll be okay.
There could be a Christmas Eve game. There could be a New Year's Eve game.
There should be a Christmas Eve game.
There could be all sorts of ideas that the AFLW.
I think they're taking a week's break over Christmas, though, aren't they?
Yeah. But I would imagine that, Christmas Eve would be a pretty lucrative spot, I reckon.
New Year's Eve.
New Year's Day. That window between Christmas and New Year's might be off, but you might have one game either side of it to sort of...
I don't think you want a Boxing Day game. You want to leave that to the cricket?
No, that's... You leave Boxing Day alone, I reckon.
Yeah.
And you might play... Like, you might not play in New South Wales when the Sydney Test is on. Yeah. Like, you avoid that, the local conflict. Obviously, from a spectator perspective, it's a bit different. But Test cricket's in the daytime. You play your footy at night, roll in. So there's ways you can actually piggyback off all that stuff, I reckon.
That's
too.
An October now pre-season start?
I would think... Now, I don't know this with any greats in any certainty at all. I would think we'd be September.
Okay.
Because we're bringing everything forward 6 weeks-ish or 6 or 7 weeks. We'd normally start mid-October.
You're mid-September then.
Late October, so it's sort of September, I would think.
Yep.
I don't know that for sure. Man, it's just guesswork. But, yeah, it'll be a bit busier a bit earlier on.
I mean, you know my thoughts on AFLW, but I think at the end of the day, it's something they have to do. And when we talk about clean air, it's clean air from the AFL, not clean air from other sports. But I think it is a bit silly that the AFL are trying to promote a new competition within their own sort of umbrella, and that when it gets important with the final series, the AFL is on and it kind of gets lost. So that's the clean air. I think it's the right thing to do to be sort of finishing it off in mid-March before the AFL starts. And as a result of that, they have to start before Christmas. So
the numbers went down around about 45%. Viewing numbers when the men's competition started.
So that's
a significant change. You've got to find a way to avoid that, because clearly footy fans are still watching footy, but they're not watching your footy. No. So there's it makes perfect sense.
That's compelling. You have to change that.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
effectively now, AFL football, men's and women's, will be 12 months of the year.
Well, see, this is the thing. This is what I imagine would be a utopia for headquarters.
Well, because... So what happens? October is dominated by trade.
Yep.
Dominated by trade talk. So November, then you build into the draft, obviously. December, the AFLW starts. Yeah,
they've wanted this for a long time, but they had to wait until they were ready to do it. And I guess they think they're ready to do it now. It'll be interesting because I think there's two parts to that. Yes, it's great that AFL... content is 12 months of the year, but you also, I think there has to be some concern about oversaturation of the product. We'll see. I don't know the answer to it. No one will know the answer to it until they do it.
Yeah.
I
understand that. I still think, and I've said this before publicly, that they're different games. Mm. And you're watching for your footy fan, but there's nowhere near the intensity through an AFLW season for a fan as there is through the men's season. I just think they're different. It's a different vibe, the whole thing, from a spectator to playing to all those areas.
Was there any reaction from the girls on the WhatsApp group last night?
Nothing that would suggest it was a bad thing. Because I think, because there's such a break between the seasons, they're actually pretty keen to get rolling again, a lot of these girls. Yeah. I don't think they're too distressed about it at all, from what I can see. John's on the road. Wants to get involved. You can join us anytime you like. 1-300-652-927. Good morning, John.
Why don't they play it before the main matches, mate? You're going to have 18 sides. What about these girls playing like the reserves used to in the old days?
Curtain raisers.
Double hitters, we call
them. Football is played in the winter, mate, not summertime. I reckon it'll be fantastic. And then they can share it and everything. Why don't they do that to AFL?
Well, because, again, probably viewership would be challenged because you'd have to have different time slots. Like, if we look at a Saturday format now, there's Saturday afternoon, twilight, night games. If you're playing double headers earlier or later, it doesn't really matter if you're playing before or after, the men's competition will keep rolling. The men's games will keep rolling and you probably lose your audience anyway. And there's only 14 teams, so how do you do that all the way through? It's a challenge. So I think this free air, this clear air, is probably the way to go. We'll see how we go, John. I might be wrong. But thank you for your call. Appreciate that. We'll see what happens. Peter Hanscom's going to join us shortly. Can I just bring this up from Aaron Hamill yesterday? We spoke to Aaron Hamill yesterday, who's assistant coach of the St Kilda Football Club, the great Sammy Hamill. Good fella. Been involved for a long time.
Did he tell a little bit of a first?
Well, I don't know what he knew and what he didn't know. But this is what he was talking about yesterday when we asked him about the injury to Zach Jones.
He had some awareness in his quad late yesterday in training. But, yeah, obviously not ideal without awareness, but we'll just see where that sits.
So some awareness in his quad yesterday for Zach Jones, which is a bit of a concern for Saints fans when they heard that, the assistant coach telling us that. Do you reckon... you talk about the WhatsApp group. I reckon Sammy's been taken off the WhatsApp group for the Saints coaches. He might not have been aware of the damage to our man Zach yesterday, who has ripped his quaddy off the bone. And has required significant surgery to reattach that, yeah, and will possibly not play for the rest of the year.
Correct.
So it's gone from awareness from our man Sammy Hamill to no more year for Zach Jones.
So I'll ask Whitey this question. If you were the media manager at a football club, how would you want an assistant coach, player, whoever, to describe the injury if they were doing some media?
Probably not like that. Maybe he should have said he's got quad fully awareness. Look, it's a difficult one, Rama, because obviously, clearly, everyone needs to be on the same page and there needs to be alignment the whole way through a club. And it's the whole thing about what the football department wants to let out versus what the media department want to let out, all those sorts of things. But to me, if I was part of a media department, I'd be fully transparent. And because what happens is that, and this is what football departments still fail to understand, is that the journalist's job is to know things. And so sometimes they know things that the football department don't think they know. And it's much better to be open and transparent, because you're actually being open and transparent with your members and your fans above all else. And at the end of the day, it's going to come out. So under those circumstances, I just think that as soon as you know something about a player, just put it out there. And you don't have to say specifically he's going to be out for 12 months or he's going to be out for 12 weeks.
But I think it's a significant injury.
Exactly right.
We're just waiting
for a prognosis on it. So I would say we don't know the actual extent of it at this stage, but it's pretty serious. Zach Jones left the track last night. He was pretty distressed. We're a bit worried about it. Hopefully we get some good news, but it doesn't look particularly good at this stage, and he could be out for quite some time.
Now, if you're in a final series, I understand that. You want to keep the opposition guessing a little bit. What are they doing at selection? But we're at round 9. So I think you're better off getting on the front foot.
Well, it's no good for Zach, and we wish him the best with his recovery off the SMS. No wonder he had some awareness in the stretcher at the hospital. It's a fair SMS. But
it's a shocking injury.
Yeah, it's a
shocking injury.
The thing, too, is that it's like with the Patrick Cripps situation. I know David Teague was getting frustrated yesterday. Now, I know a lot of people listening will roll their eyes or whatever, but journalists don't make stuff up generally. And especially...
Especially
a senior journalist like Peter Ryan, he's not just going to... Or Michael Gleeson particularly. They're not just going to make stuff up.
We can change our attention now to the world of cricket. Pete Hanscom is the Victorian cricket captain. He's over in the UK playing county cricket with Middlesex, and he joins us on The Breakfast Club. Hello, Pete.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure having you on. How many times have you done the whole county cricket thing?
This is my fourth season and fourth club as well. So, again, working my way around.
Why the fourth club? How does that work? Do they come looking for you, or you just look for a spot somewhere on the list?
Yeah, not sure. No one seems to want to have me back for a second year. So I'm just going around until someone can. But the beauty is, mate, I've got a 2-year contract with Middlesex, so I'll be here for 2 years at least.
Great news. That's very good for your stability across your career. Hey, well done, by the way. We spoke to Marcus Harris last week. He was awarded the Bill Laurie Medal for the Best Shield Player. You were the Dean Jones Award winner for the Best One-Day Player. Nice to have those little things ticking along as you go through.
Yeah, it is. Nice reward to get, for a lot of hard work and trying to get better and better. And obviously, with Dino's passing this year, it was pretty special to get something like that, in his honour.
Now, we've got to be upfront here, Pete. I'm very grateful that you've jumped on the line, because you are in the middle of a game, and you didn't do much last night, it's fair to say, or morning your time. Let's appreciate the fact that he's come on. I'd be grumpy. I wouldn't want to be talking to anyone.
You don't have to answer that, Pete.
No, it's fine. Golden Ducks happen in cricket all the time, mate. So, you learn to live with them pretty quickly, and you just got to move on. So it's all good. Talk about whatever you want.
All right, very good. Yes, because you're playing at the moment against Hampshire, and look, at one point you weren't even going to get on. It's been pretty wet over there at the moment.
Yeah, forecast isn't great. Typical sort of English summer. The next sort of week looks grey and wet, unfortunately. But yeah, we managed to get on for about 36 overs tonight, which was good. And hopefully we can set ourselves up for the rest of the game.
So tell us about what it's like over there at the moment. Obviously, it's not the normal world that we're used to. You've had such a long season here in Australia. You go over the UK, you've got a quarantine, and you're back playing again. What's life like for an Australian cricketer playing professional cricket in England?
It's pretty relentless over here at the moment with the schedule. We're playing one game a week, 1 4-day game a week, so that's starting every Thursday. So Thursday to Sunday, you basically have Monday off, get back to training Tuesday, Wednesday, and then start all over again on Thursday. So it's a bit easier as a batsman. It's definitely tough on these county bowlers that have to keep charging in week in, week out. But that's sort of the county grind, and that's kind of how they play their cricket over here.
Pete, all things considered, it would have been easy to say no to going over to England this year. Why was it important to get over there?
I think it's just good, one, personally, for my career, just to keep trying to play as much cricket as possible and keep putting my hand up, you know, for higher honours if that ever does come. So it's a good way of trying to improve my game personally, and also just the privilege of being able to play, you know, at Lords and Captain Middlesex was a pretty amazing opportunity. So it was something I really, really couldn't say no to, given the circumstances in the world at the moment and what's going on in London. But, you know, they're starting to come out of that lockdown, which is pretty good for the people over here.
So do you go over there with the mindset of, I just want to make as many runs as I possibly can, or do you go over there wanting to work on a part of your game to make sure that you get that absolutely cherry ripe for them when, obviously, that selection for the Australian team comes up?
Yeah, I think the beauty about being able to travel around the world is playing all in different conditions and trying to adapt your game as quickly as possible to each of these conditions. So, you know, I've struggled in the past before going from Australia, coming into England and trying to make runs straight away, and it's sort of happening again this year. So it's about trying to find that adjustment in your game as quickly as possible. And the more times you do it, the better, you know, hopefully that you're going to get. And then that can, you know, further any kind of ambitions you've got at playing higher levels.
I'm interested to find out more about the leadership situation, Pete. I mean, you've got an international player coming across to Captain Middlesex at Lords, you know, one of the most famous venues on the planet. You've got this guy with luscious hair who rolls in and starts to be captain. How's that dynamic work with the locals?
Well, no, so far so good. Luckily enough, well, we haven't had crowds, so I haven't had the old school sort of Lords members commenting on the hair, because I dare say that probably wouldn't go down well just yet. I actually signed for Middlesex about 18 months ago, obviously before COVID hit, and was going to be playing last year but didn't go over. Mm. So we've actually had quite a lot of conversations and a lot of Zoom meetings, and I've met a lot of the boys previously as well. So sort of got a head start in terms of building relationships coming into the team. And then when we got here, just tried to keep those relationships and keep building them as best as possible, as quickly as possible.
How different is that dynamic for you? How is it from a captaincy perspective? Obviously, Victorian players, you've been around for a long time. I know there's new guys that come through the system, but you don't spend a lot of time outside of the season when you get there for the county cricket with these guys. Is it a different feel for you when you get there and have to lead?
Definitely a different feel, yeah. You sort of got to get an understanding of what, you know, what guys are like on the field as opposed to what they are off the field. And, you know, the nature of the game can make people change a little bit, and sort of just understanding what their role is during the game and being able to implement that as best as possible. So
finding out, you know, more and more each game about guys in the team and guys in the squad, and yeah, just trying to get the greatest understanding of them all as quickly as possible.
I want to ask a couple of questions about the Victorian setup, Pete, but just one more on where you are at the moment. We saw you play so well in the Sheffield Shield, particularly after Christmas. You're hitting the ball so nicely. Is it a situation at the moment that you still feel you're in that same sort of zone that you're just getting out?
Well, yeah, it's a weird one. I feel like I'm hitting the ball okay in the nets and my movements are sort of similar. But after a couple of hits, you know, it's sort of that self-doubt starts to come back in. Because I haven't done it over here just yet to have those sort of confident knocks to look back on.
Yeah.
Whereas in Australia, if you go through a bit of a, or if I go through a bit of a run form or run slump, I can look back on games and sort of know what I need to do to get out of it. So sort of just feel like I'm searching a little bit and trying to find the answer, which, you know, when you're doing that, you're sort of in a dangerous place and you've got to try and go back to basics and hope that they're good enough moving forward.
The first leg of the quaddy tomorrow is, well, the feature event on the card, I imagine, Dino, the Andrew Ramsden. 2,800 metres of golden ticket into the Melbourne Cup. If you're good enough, $400,000 up for grabs. And we've got equal favourites. Number 5, Miami Bound for DT O'Brien. And number 6, Realm of Flowers for the Friedman boys. Where do you go in the Andrew Ramsden?
I'm going with those two principally, Daniel. I think the mares will fight it out. We saw a mare win it last year in Ocean X and get her way into the Melbourne Cup. And Miami Bound ran in last year's Melbourne Cup, and I think she's probably going better now than then. She won the Moonee Valley Cup on the way through. Her past two runs in Sydney have been outstanding, and the likelihood of a bit of rain only enhances her prospects. Ben Allen's riding really well. I think she's the one to beat. Realm of Flowers, things didn't go right for her in Sydney. She should have won the Mannion Cup, and then she was in the worst ground in the Sydney Cup. She was back to the inside, and all the momentum was out wide. She ran very, very well. I think Flemington's going to suit Mark Zahra aboard's a real plus, but giving chances to Persan, we know he's a good Flemington horse. I don't know what went wrong last start, but the fact that the Mar used to stable up, progressing on with him, I think you've got to respect him. Fifth in the Melbourne Cup last year. Two Grand Promenades, the one that's not well weighted, but he's progressive, and he'll make his own luck up on the speed, and I think he'll run well. And the third of the Mar Eustace treble is Through Irish Eyes, who I'm a real fan of. I think probably be talking about him more in this race next year on his way to a Melbourne Cup as a 5-year-old. But if he happened to win tomorrow, obviously they'd take up the option. But I just think he's probably one preparation away, but reluctant to leave him out, so we'll put him in next best. But I think it's a good race for the mares.
We'll get the market very short. Can I ask a question? It might be stupid, so tell me if it is. Why would Miami Bound be running in this race, considering she probably already qualified for the Melbourne Cup, wouldn't she?
She would be, but there's 400,000 on the table.
Yeah,
Daniel.
Righto. Just checking.
Yeah, I think it's a good prize. I mean, she doesn't. As you're right, she probably doesn't need the golden ticket, but you know, it's nothing wrong with a mare in form, running at the track she loves.
Yep, fair enough. What's the market say, Quinny?
She has been the best backed runner as well. 6.50 into 4.20, the second elect now at that quote. Realm of Flowers has trimmed up from 4.20 into 4. Persan was the initial favourite, 4 out to 4.80. Grand Promenade, 5.50 out to 6. And then Through Irish Eyes, a $6 chance on Persan. Dino, this horse has been an absolute darling for punters since breaking the maiden for the Mar Eustace stable. This campaign was really impressive, winning first up and then a well-documented failure last start, has been soft in the market again here. Do you think he'll continue to drift, or do you think people that have been with him over that magnificent streak will start to gravitate back towards him and there'll be a swing back towards the initial favourite?
Yeah, it's a leap of faith to forgive his last run because it was his most recent run, and as good as he's been, that was a plain performance. And have to turn him around in sort of 2.5 weeks. It'll be a good training effort. So I think he'll sort of run about $5.50.
And it's well documented. You win this race, you're in the Melbourne Cup. What do you make of the field overall? Did you think it might have been a little bit bigger and stronger?
Don't think it needs to be bigger, and I think probably they've got the right blender. I wouldn't have mind seeing it for 3, 4, 5, and 6-year-olds because we have so many European stayers now or Northern Hemisphere bred horses. A horse like Barade, who's not there after winning so well on Anzac Day, he's actually, in years and months, he's 5 years old and 1 month, but he's counted as a 6-year-old to Southern Hemisphere time. So he couldn't run in the race, which is a bit of a shame because I think he's a really progressive stayer. So that would be the only thing I would maybe think of tinkering with because we do have the horses coming through a bit later.
All right, that's the first race on tomorrow's quaddie at Flemington, the Andrew Ramsden, the golden ticket to the Melbourne Cup. Rammer, your job around here is just to give us the numbers. It's pretty straightforward. Easy. Write them down as Dino says them and give them to us at the conclusion. What are they for the first leg tomorrow, please?
5, 6, 3, 2, and 9.
5, 6, 3, 2, and 9 for the first leg of the quaddie. Race number 7 is the Royal Ascot Silver Bowl, 1,400-metre affair, Dino. There are 11 going around, and the favourite is number 2, Altai Ranger. For Johnny Sadler, tomorrow's menu is still swimming. You know that. How's Altai Ranger going to go?
Well, I don't know if we're going to get any money to go to the seafood extravaganza out of Altai Ranger tomorrow, Ramirez. But I like him better on dry ground. So I think the potential of rain is against him, and 1,400 is his upper limit. So I'm sort of taking him on. I like a couple of odds here. I think 7, Celestial Soul. Chris Waller's had this horse for a while now, and he's just been sort of tinkering around with him, tried to make him stay last preparation, ride him right back. Last start, they put the blinkers on and rode him forward, and I thought he ran a really good race. And I think if they stick with that, and he's won on soft ground, he's won on very wet ground, actually. So I think he can run very well. And Graham Pope, who only won a 58 grade last start, but he drops 9.5 kilos. And Brett Preble wanting to ride 54 kilos in the off-season, that interests me greatly. Mm. So they're the two at odds that I'm interested in. Rathlin, I thought he was going to win last start, and he might have had a little bit of a think about it late and got nabbed right on the line. But he's running consistently for this grade. And Ranting is, if you put him in, which I'm going to, you're putting in the best horse in the race. Will he run 1,400 with 62 kilos? I don't know, but he handles soft ground. He's down way down in class on his good first run in Adelaide last start off afresh, and I'll put him in next best. But I think 7 and 10 are good value chances there.
All right, good value chances. How much value, Quinny?
Plenty of value. The 7, Celestial Soul, Dino's on top selection, and a $14 chance. Whoa. In from 15. And Grand Pope, excellent value as well, currently at $9. Dino, if we wanted to spend $20 on this race, how would we go about it?
Oh, we could. I would be sort of just having $10 on both of them, and you good chance of getting it collected at a price. I'll just split your 20 that way.
Well, take the bundle bet at $5.54. Although Celestial Soul, you'd have one running for more than if you did your strategy, which is you're on topper.
Yes.
Yes, you would. Altai Ranger favourite at this stage has been a little soft. Do you think the horse will start favourite, or do you think that market will continue to trend in the direction away from the favourite?
I think depending on how the weather goes, if we get on a 6, I don't know if he'll even start. I think he'll be a real risk, and I'd be surprised if he runs favourite.
Righto. So a bit of a buy beware there for Altai Ranger in race number 7, the second leg of the quaddie. Not in Dino's numbers. What are those numbers, please, Rama?
7, 10, 4 and 1.
7, 10, 4 and 1. Back to top 2, straight out, and you can finish in front, says Dino. I like that system. Race number 8 is the third leg of the 1,400 metres. The Congratulations Australian Racing Hall of Fame inductees race, it's named. And there are 14 going around, Dino. Number 12 is the favourite at tab.com.au. Viral. D.T. O'Brien, Willie Price in the saddle, 440 or thereabouts.
And a really good chance too, Daniel. First up from a spell, looks really well weighted, has trialled well, has got a great winning chance, but so has number 4, Riddle Me That, who's just got the race fitness, so I've gone his way. He's had the 3 runs back. I think he's going really well, and his runs have been at Moonee Valley, Caulfield. I think he's a better horse at Flemington, as we saw when he won the Paris Lane back in the spring. Soft ground, okay. I think by this stage of the day, drawn out, it's a beautiful spot. And with the claim, he's on the limit weight. I think he's really hard to beat, number 4, Riddle Me That. The danger's viral. Little concern drawn in by this stage of the day, whether they'll be edging out, with the wear and tear on the track, but he's certainly got the right sort of credentials to win a race like this first up. And as I said, he's trialled really well. 7 Yearlong January. I thought probably ridden a little bit too conservatively last start. In front, he's a horse that likes to roll along at a good speed. I think if he does that, he can be competitive. He's got a good record here. And 11 Bumper Blast. 1,400 at Flemington's absolutely his sweet spot. And I thought his run in the Wongoom at Warrnambool was terrific. and just getting out to the longer trip and drawn out by this stage of the day, no disadvantage. But, yeah, I'm pretty keen on Riddle Me That.
And for Matt Laurie, the trainer of the Flying Filly, who's probably in great distress now that she's gone, Dino, just be wary of those things. And when you're tipping these horses, just be wary. Quinny, what's the market say?
Viral, currently a $4.40 favourite. Dino's on topper, Riddle Me That, on the second line of betting at $5.50 with Yulong January. We have Reykjavik, $8.50, Bumper Blast, $11. Dino, we know you can't put them all in, but a couple at the pointy end of the market that you've left out include the Wongoon winner, Innkeeper, who's at $18, and a couple of ultra-consistent gallopers in Reykjavik and Galaxy Raider. What's the little concern with those three?
So, Innkeeper's at the pointy end of the market at $18. Must be a wide market.
Yeah, it's a very wide market. A
couple of clips from Dino here.
Yeah, and fair enough, too.
That's
sometimes
poor,
you've got to be
poor pricing there, Nicholas.
You know I shop for value, Dino, so 18 is at the top of the market.
Okay. Well, he's
you're the last bloke to shop for value.
Yes. 1,400 metres is the query on him. He's going really well, but his 1,400 metre record's poor. Galaxy Raider, I would love to have seen him drawn out, say, with Bumper Blast and Riddle Me That, where they are drawn in. He's probably going to follow Viral through. He'll just need the luck to go his right way. And what was the other one, Reykjavik?
Yep.
He's had a busy start to his preparation. His fourth run in 28 days. He ran pretty well at the Bull, and 1,400 suits. He's there with a chance. He's around the mark in these sort of races, but as you said, can't put them all in.
All right, Whitey's got a vanilla slice in his mouth. He can't give us the numbers. Rama, can you give us the numbers, please, for the third leg of the quaddie?
4, 12, 7, and 11.
Race number 9, the York Trophy, is the last leg of the quaddie tomorrow at headquarters. 1,600-metre affair, benchmark 78, Dino. There is a full field of 16 going around in this one. An Ocean Miss for David and Coral Feek is favourite at tab.com.au at $4.80.
Yeah, she's a very good chance, Daniel, in what's an open race. An important scratching of number 16, Dazzling Damsel, allows number 17, ooh, Sam Fabrizio, into the field. And I'm going with this horse from the Hawks Yard. He was very well fancied first up at Bendigo and ran well. I think an inside draw there was probably against him. He was ridden a little bit close, and I thought he ran well. He dropped 6 kilos for that run. He'll be fitter. I'm hoping they just ride him a little bit quieter, and I think he's a very nice horse coming through the grades, an import for the team, and I think he'll run very well to beat 13 Pearl Bandit. We've currently got the Adelaide Carnival on, and Leo McDonald and Andrew Glewis want to bring Pearl Bandit to Melbourne, so this must be a really suitable race. I thought the last run around the very tight Morpheville Parks track was terrific. Drops in weight, Ben Allender rides a plus. Ocean Miss has got a great chance. She ran really well here last start. 14 Dirty Deeds gets blinkers first time. Just worried about barrier one by this stage of the day. And 7 Influential Girl, I thought she ran pretty well first up, and soft track suits her. She'll be steaming home late. But I think Sam Fabrizio's a pretty up-and-coming horse and hard to beat.
All right, gets into the field with a scratching of number 16, Dazzling Damsel, as Dino said. How's that going to affect things, Quinny?
Has been the second best back runner in the race, number 17, Sam Fabrizio, currently at $5. The market mover is the 10 and outright favourite, Ocean Mist. Then we've got Dirty Deeds at $5.50, and there's been a little bit of each-way support for Vegas Knight, who's a $14 chance. Dino, number 14, Dirty Deeds. There's always two schools of thoughts with these runners that are knocking on the door of a win but can't quite salute. One is they sort of lack that killer punch, or as Richard Friedman always says when he's on air, they're racing really well, and if that's the case, stick with them because a win can't be far away. Where does Dirty Deeds sort of fit into the picture with you?
Yeah, he's about that, I think. I think he's on his mark. He's racing well. I think they've tinkered here with the gear change. The other thing is I think he's a bit better on softer ground, so he's probably going to get on his preferred surface tomorrow. But as I said a minute ago, just worried about that inside draw for him. But if it's okay by this stage of the day, he's got a great chance.
And Mr. Yushu's one that's had a little bit of support at the longer odds. Won well in Adelaide last start. Also accepted for a race here on Sunday. What did you make of this horse for a potential first four sort of chance?
Yeah, well, he needs another 3 scratchings before we get, or a couple of scratchings before we can worry about him. But if he gets in, he's probably a little chance, but he's a better chance on Sunday.
Better chance on Sunday. There you go. A bit of feedback for you, Quinny. Just save your cash and get your bank tomorrow and put it in on Sunday for that one. Grammar, what are the numbers, please, for the last leg of the quaddie?
17, 13, 10, 14, and 7.
Now, you're not going to believe this. This SMS just come through. No. You wouldn't believe it, don't I? Half, I heard the music of an ice cream van outside, so I ran out to try and find it. Missed the quaddy numbers. Can you get Ramon to read them out again, please? That's coming through off the SMS. And there's another one saying, half, sorry, can't believe it. I was inside getting another vanilla slice from Blair's Bakery at Wallace Bakery there. Can you please read the numbers again? And I think on the... on the fact that Blair looked after us today, we probably should do that for that customer.
Absolutely.
And possibly Blair as well. What are the numbers, please, for the quaddy tomorrow at Flemington?
Okay, race 6, 5, 6, 3, 2, and 9. Race 7, 7, 10, 4, and 1. Race 8, 4, 12, 7, and 11. Finally, race 9, 17, 13, 10, 14, and 7.
All right, they are your numbers for the quaddy tomorrow at Flemington Early Doors on a Friday morning. Make sure you listen on Saturday mornings as well, just for the clarifications on all of that, maybe some scratchings. We'll see. Dino, the famous formula bet is the best system in the world. I reckon you get to invest on behalf of one of our lucky listeners who registers at rsn.net.au. Who is that lucky listener this week, and where are you going, please?
Yeah, I think we got a little result last week out of the two shorties. Daniel, I think it was about... a couple of $100, $280 or something like that. So hopefully for Terry Matthews of Kahuna, we can do likewise. And we're going with $40 the win, race 4, number 8, Don't Doubt Dory. $40 the win, race 8, number 4, Riddle Me That. And $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 4, number 8, into race 8, number 4, for Terry Matthews of Kahuna.
Good luck to you, Terry. 48 into 84. Quinny comes to what?
1540 pre-multiplier. Don't Doubt Dory a 280 chance, and Riddle Me That at 550.
Good luck to you. And 1540, that's a nice little formula bet for Dino. It's a great system. Register at the website rsn.net.au. You've been sniffing around for a bit of value in the Rammer Ruffy.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. The perfect balance of power and refinement. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger.
We've had interstate Ruffies the last couple of weeks, Dino. Where are we going this week?
Yeah, I think we'll continue that trend, Daniel. We're going to head to the final day of the Adelaide Carnival at Morphettville. We're going to go race 6, and I'm very happy this one's crept into the field. Number 16, Kentucky Tornado, ran very well first up in Adelaide, actually beaten by the filly that went on to win the Australasian Oaks. And I just think a little target race for the O'Brien stable, a new addition to the O'Brien stable, Craig Williams aboard. I think it'll run a mighty race at good odds.
What do you got? 6.16 in Adelaide tomorrow, please, Quinny.
26 Oi. Into 23, and currently $6 the drum.
23 and 6, oh. If you don't mind, for the Rammer Ruffy tomorrow in Adelaide. Race 6, number 16. Fantastic stuff. That's the stuff we're after. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Hey! Happy birthday! Playing this song, not because it's someone who wrote this, his birthday, because it's Boomer Harvey's birthday, and according to the birthday bulletin, it says, AFL player with North Melbourne, Boomer, or Pipes as they now call him, holds the record for most matches played by an individual in AFL history, 432 in brackets.
Under threat.
Breaking Michael Tuck's previous record in 2016. He played North's 1999 Premiership team. He retired, kicking up a fuss and throwing a tantrum at the end of 2016. That's what it says. Boomer Harvey for the Friday Footy Preview. Happy birthday, mate.
Thank you, mate. 28 today, so it's 38 today, so it's getting a little bit old.
Congratulations, 38 again for the fifth time. That's fantastic stuff.
Yes, exactly right. Driving in, I did hear you speak about the gentleman who kicked 32.
Yes.
Goal, 34 goals.
32.
Didn't get
32.
The best player, or didn't get the best player.
Yep.
Second best.
Quick story, under 15s, young fella named Boomer playing...
give us a spell.
Needed 15 in the last round to win the goal kicking. I kicked 21 in that day. Best and fairest comp night. Last round, I was behind by 2 votes.
Oh.
Come to our game, last round. Beautiful, I'm going to win the 3. Get the 3, obviously. Win the best in comp. 2 votes, B. Harvey.
You didn't get the 3
your,
for 21.
Your mate, Frankie Razzo, ended up at Collingwood for a couple of years, got the 3 votes.
Well, when you're hungry, trying to kick 21 goals.
I wasn't hungry. Clearly I just had a good day.
You,
I just had a
good day. You 15 to win the goal kick. You got hungry.
Started on the ball, kicked 7 in the first quarter half.
So this is
I can't remember the day, but I kicked 7, 4, 2 and 8, but I can't remember it.
23
really
years ago, and clearly he's got over it.
So what age group was this?
Oh, I think it was 15s.
15, you kicked 21.
No,
you should get the 3 when you kick 21 in the 15.
Sure. What about 34?
He's
didn't give the best.
I
had a bit of a chuckle because it brought back some memories for me.
And it cost you the medal too, the league medal.
I know.
That's stiff.
Diamond
but Frankie Razzo, one of the greats.
You wouldn't have wanted to share it anyway. You would have wanted it outright.
100%.
Frankie's making pools these days, I think.
He is. Yeah, absolutely.
Doing good things.
Doing really good things.
Captain of the mighty Preston Footy Club on Northern
Good Northern Knights boy.
Yep. Great man. Great man. Now, what's been happening your week, Boomer?
What have we done? No. You got a team to choose from this
week? Well, that's what I was going to ask.
What do you mean?
You got 14 on your injury list. 14 players.
Yeah, it's big, actually.
How are we getting through this at the Kangaroos?
We're getting through because we've got 23 players. He did throw my name up yesterday in the match committee, but I think it might have been a bit of a joke, unfortunately.
I'm not so sure about that.
It's tough. It's actually tough because not only, I think I mentioned it last week, not only we've got a lot of injuries, but we've got some good key injuries to our back line, which is pivotal to how we go about our football. But our VFL development last week finished with 17 on the field as well. So we've got three listed players to choose from in our VFL team. Three.
Wow. Jeez, how are those three players feel? Yeah.
We're bringing kids over from Tassie to play, and it's not great because they're not training with us. So we're getting belted in the VFL, unfortunately, but there's a valid reason for that as well.
So David Noble mentioned Trent Dumont yesterday in his press conference and said he's probably going to have to play, but he's not ready to play yet. Yep.
He played
a couple of weeks back in the twos.
He's played in the twos 50% game time the first week, and then last week upped the ante a little bit more. I think ideally they would probably want to play him in the VFL one more week, but unfortunately, or fortunately for Trent, he's probably going to play this week in the in the senior season. He's a good player. He works super hard. So he's done his rehab, and he's the best trainer at the football club.
So it does create a lot of problems, that level of injury at a footy club, because we all always think immediately of players available for the game.
Yep.
But for training, you've got no one out there on the track. You can't do your match sim properly and all that sort of stuff.
No, well, normally you play like a 16 on 16 in season, so you got 32 to choose from. I think the other day we had 24 running around on the park.
Yeah, that changes the dynamic of
training. It's a bit hard to play 12 on 12.
More importantly, are you getting any of those players back in the coming, let's call it month?
We should be getting him back in about 3 weeks, but there's not too many short-term. Like, I don't think there's one that's next week comes back in. I don't think there is any of them. There might be one, but I'm not too sure. But they're all about 3 or 4 weeks away. So it's going to be a tough little month for us to get through just that injury part.
Is Robbie Tarrant getting closer?
Yes. Yes, yeah. Yeah, Taz is, he's probably the one that's not too far off.
Could you play in the VFL? Are you able to play? Because you're still playing suburban football.
Yeah, I actually don't know.
Like, to help out in the...
I help out at training every now and then. Not so much this year, but last year...
Would you put your hand up to say, look, you know, if you need to play in the seconds, you'd play?
No.
He doesn't play seconds, mate. Yeah.
So what's happening now with that, Whitey, is...
So where do the players come
they're
from?
They're allowed to come from the NAB League.
Yeah.
Right.
You can go and get those kids and have a look at some of those kids that you potentially may draft.
Feed to a certain club, or you just...
It's zone now, but if those kids... So, for instance, if somebody's in the Western Bulldogs zone, but the Western Bulldogs haven't asked them to play VFL... We could go and get him and say, can you play VFL with us? Last week, young Jackson Archer, Glenn Archer's boy, because he's Northern Knights' father's son.
Yep.
So he's allowed to play.
Okay.
He played last week with us. But the rest of our boys, we're zoned down Tasmania. So we've been flying young kids in from Tassie.
When you were playing in the NAB League half, which was called the TSC Cup, did you play reserves football in your top age year?
No, they'd shut that down. I reckon they did. They played the first couple of years. They did. They had the supplementary list. The guys would go up. I don't think we had any guys go up.
Well, I definitely played.
We had for
Hawthorn and for Collingwood.
When I was at North Melbourne, we definitely had young kids coming up and playing.
When I was at Essendon, we still had them. We had Paul Chapman.
Did you get drafted in bottom age though, half? Would you bottom age?
Yeah, I had another year to go. Yeah,
so you wouldn't have been allowed to play.
That's right. Yeah,
you wouldn't have been allowed to play.
No, that's right.
You're such a child prodigy that you got drafted early.
Darren Jarman.
Shout out, you idiots.
Hey, so Rama, it's a question for you, putting your manager's hat on, because there's been talk about list sizes needing to be increased because they would decrease through COVID and all that sort of thing. And there's even been talk that they should go further down. Is this proof that it can't, or that it needs to go up, or is it an illustration that this is a great opportunity for those emerging players to actually get some experience in topping up?
Well, it definitely proves it can't go down, because, you know, if they want it to go down, if say there was 30, they were spoken about last year that they wanted a list size of 32 or 34.
Yeah.
If that was the case right now at North Melbourne, they wouldn't be able to field a team.
No, we wouldn't be.
They'd be choosing from 20 players.
Yeah.
Which is, that's a disaster. So, but on the other hand, I love the idea of those NAB League players.
Well, that's what I'm thinking.
Getting the opportunity to play in the reserves.
So they had that sup list there for a while as well. I mean, is that something that they could potentially look at again?
One of the great stories of the sup list was my great friend Stevie Milne. Oh, we were short of players in the preseason match in the reserves, and I said to Adrian Dodoro, give him a call. And Stevie jumped in the car, and 2 hours later he was at the ground and he played, and the rest is history. He goes on to play nearly 300 games for St Kilda.
It's a touch wood that this doesn't happen, but if Kangaroos got 3 or 4 more injuries this week, we would actually have to request, can one of our VFL-listed players come up and
play? I don't think they wouldn't allow that.
Well, what would you play with, 21 players or 22 and no sub?
The problem, it's the contracting side of things. That's
they
where
couldn't
the
leave
issue.
A club short, though, you can't, because of rotations.
But I don't think they can, because of the integrity of the competition.
They would have to. It's never happened before, no. I wouldn't have thought.
No.
They would have to tweak the rule for a week. It would have to be special, wouldn't it?
Well, what
surely.
What they do?
Well, they've never had a situation like that ever, but
they're gonna have to.
I don't think they would. Oh, you, so hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. You always say, oh, that's list management. Your list is your list.
Yeah.
You always say that.
Yeah.
So your list is your list.
That's different, don't worry.
Yeah, I think that's a bit different when you run out of players.
It's an unusual occurrence to run out of players, Rammer, in fairness. Well, I'm with you. He does say your list is part of the art of
it. And I maintain on that. I maintain it. But
injuries
are the art of the fact that
the North Melbourne play.
But that's the art of preparing your players. It's all there.
You make sure you draft players that have drunk their milk so they don't break bones.
Absolutely.
Collision injuries are a touch more difficult to predict.
North Melbourne run out against Hawthorn 19-23.
No, I get where you're coming from, but I don't see how what you're saying, you can then go and say to a VFL player, you're now on an AFL list.
No, I think it would be a 1 week contract of some sort.
Geez, that opens Pandora's box.
Well, speaking of contracts and windows and all that sort of stuff, the mid-season draft's coming up.
It is.
And there's a dude, they reckon, in the NAB League, Jacob Edwards, this big ruck. Do you know much about this guy, Rimmer?
Yep.
Looks like the Kangaroos might be interested in this fella, and they'll get first crack at him. He nominated for the draft last year, was overlooked. Apparently things have blossomed, and he's really blossomed this year in the NAB League. Mm-hmm. And it's almost a situation now, not so much getting someone for the back end of the year just to plug a hole, that this is a guy that they'd probably take in the top 10 or 20 in the draft anyway, so you can get him for mid-season draft without even trying. Is that what's happening with this fella?
Yeah, potentially. There's a couple of ruckmen in this draft that I know clubs will definitely. Edwards is one. Ned Moyle's another one from Oakley Chargers. So Edwards is still going to school at Mentone Grammar. So whoever takes him is going to have to consider that. But
so he was overlooked last year in
last
year's
draft? Well, he hadn't played a game of NAB League.
So how old is he?
He's a 19-year-old.
Right.
So he hadn't played because he's still developing. And now, obviously, in the early part of the season, no doubt he's blossomed. But, he's still going to school. So, like, for example, if an interstate club took him, say it wasn't North Melbourne, for example, I think he would stay in Victoria and finish his year 12. So,
does he want to go in this mid-season draft?
I think so.
He's happy to go.
But, I think there'll be definitely a couple of ruckmen taken by clubs, and then you wonder through the sample and the waffle, those players there.
Tell you who's always news, Harris Andrews, the Brisbane Lions champ, he's a two-time All-Australian. He's a gun, he is, and the Brisbane Lions are back on track after a slowish start to the season. He joins us on the line ahead of the Q Clash. Good morning, Harris.
Good morning, fellas. How are we?
We are well, buddy. Thank you for your time. Are you feeling that the last month has been a bit of a different turnaround in form for you guys as opposed to the start?
Yeah, it certainly has. I feel like we've been able to sort of get back to the footy that we know we can play. That's probably held us in good stead the last couple of years. And as you said, after the slow start of the season, we sort of sat back and, thought about what made us a really good team over the previous 2 years. And it's been really encouraging, I guess, to be able to perform the way we wanted to over those 4 weeks. And, it's a really good opportunity this weekend to go down against a really strong Suns team and try and play the way we have been. So. It's good.
So how did that look from the club perspective and the group perspective when you had that chat about what made you a good team the last couple of years? Was it one of those sort of circle up sort of sessions? Was it just a theatre conversation with the coaches? How did it look to get back on track?
Yeah, I was just one of the reviews when we just talked about, doing the fundamentals really well and being really reliable with our teammates. We felt like for the first couple of games, we probably went away from that. And, you know, that's probably the most important thing for us, is that, you know, our teammates know exactly what we're going to be doing in every situation, just playing to our trademark. And, yeah, that's probably a result, I guess, the last 4 weeks we've been able to do that and play some really selfless footy. And, you know, that's when we're at our best. So it's been really encouraging, and we understand that that's just got to be a non-negotiable now for the rest of the season. And I certainly feel like we've matured as a group since we've had that conversation.
Harris, we saw the showdown last week and the passion, obviously, by both teams. Firstly, will you be changing into the Fitzroy jumper if you guys win? But secondly, there is actually a lot of passion now in this game. The AFL put something up on their website yesterday just about the previous games and probably the physicality of these games. Is it something that you feel now is building into a real genuine rivalry?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, probably the same as the showdown a bit. We get the opportunity to play them twice a year and then usually have a hit out in the preseason as well. So, you know, you get to know the opposition team relatively well, and certainly vying for that dominance in Queensland footy is something that, you know, produces a really good product. And, you know, we really respect the Suns. They play a really strong and tough brand of footy, and we're going to have to be on our A game to be able to play well on Saturday afternoon. So, you know, they've had some really good wins this year and a couple of really close losses as well. So we'll certainly be on our guard. And, yeah, we're just really excited for the opportunity to play them.
It looks like you're slowly starting to get your best team back on the park, albeit Lachie Neale's still a few more weeks away. But one I wanted to ask about that we saw last night in the VFL match is Nekiah Cockatoo. Mm. Now, he looked really fit. Now, he didn't get a lot of the football last night, but do you see him making his way into the team soon? And what role do you see him playing?
Yeah, certainly. You know, Cocky's done an awesome job to be able to get back to playing footy. He probably arrived here a little bit underdone after a fair bit of time down in Geelong where he wasn't out on the park. So, you know, the club's done a really strong and meticulous approach with him to build his body up and make sure that he's going to be able to play some really long, sustainable footy for us as a footy club. And, you know, the perfect example of that, I guess, is Link McCarthy. He's sort of running in that same, well, hopefully going in that same trajectory. And, you know, Cocky's really applied himself to the program. And that's all, I guess, we can ask from him as a football club. And it's great to see him out on the football field because we know he's got some serious weapons that can do some really good stuff on the field for us as a footy club. And I guess I can see him playing shortly. I mean, he's done a fair bit of work during this pre-season and in the early parts of the season down in the back line, and I think they released the shackles a bit, played him down forward just to try and you know, keep his versatility up and about. So absolutely, he's, you know, he'll be knocking down the door soon enough. I assume he'll probably just get a little bit more match fitness than that in the VFL for the time being. And then once the time comes, I'm sure he'll be ready to go. And, you know, we're really excited about what he can offer to us.
Harris, there's two players I want to ask you about. Firstly is the one is Hugh McCluggage, who has almost gone to another level again this year. And it's been really evident with Lachie out how he's gone again. He just keeps stepping up and stepping up. What's been the secret to his success and his improvement, do you think?
He's an extremely hard worker. You know, he goes off during the off season. He stays up in Brisbane actually, and then will go home for a short period, and then make sure he's back up here. And just works really hard to build his endurance tank. He obviously, you know, plays on the wing, so you've got to be pretty fit in that spot. But his ability to work every day on his skills and just make really good decisions. You know, he's probably not the fastest guy around, you know, foot speed, but his ability to make decisions and the right decision at the right time is incredible. And he's just got that real hunger to work. And, it's been awesome to see him, I guess, get a little bit more, you know, plaudits externally, because he's certainly been getting the plaudits internally at the footy club for the last couple of years. And I guess now, you know, with Lachie being out, there's probably been a little bit more of a responsibility on his shoulders to come in and play a bit more inside mid. And you know, I think he revels in that a little bit. So, it's been awesome to see the way he's, you know, transformed as a footballer over the last couple of seasons. And the fact that now he's getting a little bit of praise is exciting. But he's certainly the type of bloke that, you know, won't be falling for that. And will continue to work hard regardless of how he's going.
And Joe Danaher's the other one, and it's an obvious one in a lot of ways, but the reason I want to ask you about him is two things. He seems to be playing a little bit further up the ground, which I think he's seeing him really flourish and letting Charlie Cameron play closer to goal, but also what has been your observations of him? I'm sure you would have had to play on him in internal matches and training. And is he different to what you thought he'd be, or the same?
Yeah, back to your first point. I think a little bit of that's just based on the matchups that that the opposition throw up with our forwards. We've got a pretty flexible forward line where guys can play deep and guys can play up the ground, and depending on where we want to try and manoeuvre their opposition defenders, whether they want to be high or deep. I think that's sort of where Chuck and Joe and Eric and that sort of thing set up. And I guess with the second part with Joe, the thing that's probably amazed me the most is just his game intellect. He's an extremely smart footballer and works really hard on his craft as well at the same time. So I've really enjoyed, being able to spend the pre-season playing on him. I've certainly learned a few things along the way, and just his freakish athleticism to be able to sit on bloke's shoulders and bring the ball to ground when he's out of position is something that, I can really appreciate, because it allows guys like Charlie and Link McCarthy to get involved at ground level and certainly take it on a fair leadership role, I guess, in that forward line with alongside guys like Link McCarthy and Dan McStay and Eric as well, to be able to make sure the boys are setting up well. So, yeah, it's been awesome acquisition for the club, and it probably just helps that he's a ripping fella as well off the field. He's extremely invested in the club and, makes everyone, makes communicating with everyone really easy, and really lucky to have him.
If you've just joined us, that is the voice of Harris Andrews, the two-time All-Australian from the Brisbane Lions, with us on the Friday footy preview.
Your next four before the bye probably define your season. You go Gold Coast, which is always a tough game, Richmond, GWS, Melbourne. If you can get through that period, top four is definitely realistic. You're sitting fifth now at 5-3, but you get through that period 3-1, let's call it. Is there an eye on then on that top four?
I wouldn't say it would be eye off top four. There's still a lot of footy to be played in the second half of the season. But, we certainly understand that, the next month is a really big month for us. We've got obviously a tough one on the weekend against the Suns, and then, big games against Melbourne and Richmond in the next 3 weeks after that. And then obviously the Giants as well have been playing really well. So, it's a great opportunity for us to test ourselves against, some of the best teams in the competition, and just four teams really that play really tough, hard football. And, we think we go right in that space, and it's going to be an awesome opportunity for us to prove ourselves, I guess, and just follow the process that we have been over the last month or so. So it's an exciting opportunity.
I get to go first today. What's and the category again was?
What's the score first?
You're 17. We're a long way off. That's in short.
Yeah, but you know what Rammer is? Rammer's that bike rider that's gone way in front of the. We're in the peloton.
Yeah. I'm about 8 minutes ahead.
We know we're going to get you. It's just a question of when.
Okay. The category tonight will be handballs.
Handballs.
Yeah. We play football, but we'll take handballs.
Right, Geelong secured at handballs tonight at Marvel Stadium. I get to go first. Owen Coulson from Cheltenham is going to be very, very pleased about that, because we'll be walking away with the winner, and he with the hamper and the voucher from Ribera's, because Cam Guthrie is going to get the most handballs tonight. Looking forward to see Cam go berserk with his handball game today. Thank you very much.
Averaging 15, Cam Guthrie.
Thank you very much. Whitey, you're playing for Sam Greenwald from Balaclava. Who's going to be handling the ball a lot?
It's 2 weeks in a row that I haven't been able to get Cam Guthrie because of... Anyway, I'm going to go...
There's his butt again, see?
...with Brad Crouch, our man from the Inner Sanctum.
Good idea. Good idea. I like that selection from you. Mm. Brad Crouch for Sam and Whitey. Boomer, you've got Richard Newbold from Footscray, your fellow contestant this week.
I actually wanted to go Crouch, Whitey. There's my butt.
There's the butt.
I'm going to go with Steele.
Jack Steele. The skipper, Jack Steele for Boomer and Richard from Footscray. And a rammer as the carryover champ from last week, Mark Berenardo is your man this morning from Forest Hill. Who are you selecting?
We'll take the captain of the Geelong Cats, Joel Selwood, who's in sparkling form.
He's got an issue with his hand.
Yeah,
did you know about that?
You know how tough that man is?
Yeah, I know.
But you know how tough he is?
He'll play, but Darren, I think he'll have to kick
it a lot. He is so tough.
So Darren Mullane stuff, like real broken thumb sort of stuff.
He's on a mission, Joel Selwood, this season.
He actually is playing very well at the moment.
He's playing terrific for them.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.